Mercy Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate. Kia ora and welcome to our Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, our programs, social justice, or the Catholic Church. Today, my visitor is Brother Kieran Finn. Brother Kieran, a warm welcome and hi to Mai.
Yes, hi Mai.
Brother Kieran Finn is a Champagne Amaris brother and Bible scholar. He worked in the Philippines for a few years and then in adult education, teaching scripture in New Zealand and abroad. And he came recently, a couple of weeks ago, to the studio, and we were talking about some questions came up, and we couldn't cover them, so I'm happy that you came back, good. Brother Kieran.
Second round.
So we can follow up on some of them. Okay. Brother Kieran, one of the topics that was mentioned in our last interview was the topic of angels. As far as I know, they play a big role in all three Abrahamic traditions, in the Muslim, the Jewish, and the Christian faith. What do we know about angels from the scriptures?
Well, I'm pleased that we start with the scriptures, because there are all sorts of ideas about angels that come from whether it's Dante or Milton, or but the starting point for us should be the scriptures and the Hebrew scriptures at that. Now, whereabouts do we find angels in the Bible? Well, the beginning, of course, is in the book of Genesis, where the angels are placed at the gate to prevent the return of humanity into the Garden of Eden. The word angelos means messenger. And angels have all sorts of functions apart from guarding gates. When you look at the names of angels, you have angel names like Gabriel, which means the strength of God, and Michael, of course, is a gift from God, the power of God, and Michael had the job of guarding the city of Jerusalem. And then we have that beautiful character, the angel Raphael. And then, of course, there's all sorts of orders and spheres of angels, sort of the seven levels of angels that come out of some type of mythology, really, thrones, dominations, seraphim and cherubim. And do you know what those seraphim and cherubim really are?
They're not angels?
They're also the figures, like half lion and half human, that you see, a bit like the Sphinx, guarding the gates of Hades.
And Hades was the access to the underworld.
That's right. Well, also, of course, if you go into death, you can't come back. So the guardians of the gates of death. But the thing is, with angels, if you think about it, in the Garden of Eden, we are no longer able to speak to God face to face, which was that beautiful intimacy of the Garden of Eden. Now, God still has to communicate with human beings. So God has to have messenger angels, and because heaven is up there and earth is down here, they have to have wings to sort of come down to humanity. So angels serve a lot of functions. But one of the important things, we have things like guardian angels, for instance. Now, there's a beautiful saying of the Jewish rabbis that over every blade of grass, as over every newborn child, an angel bends and says, "Grow, little one, grow." The truth of guardian angels is God's deep personal care. But if we look at the names of these angels, Michael, Gabriel, Raphael, every name that ends in E-L-L is an aspect of God. So angels are aspects of God carrying out all sorts of functions, whether they're messenger angels, whether they are the angels at the tomb that announce the resurrection of Jesus. So when we stay with the biblical concept of angels, we can see the truth emerging that God cares for each one of us with a deep personal love.
So angels are always positive, right?
Yes. Now, that's an interesting concept because we get the non-positive aspect of bad angels.
But when you say angels are God's messengers.
Yes.
Aren't the prophets also God's messengers?
Sure, they are. But the name angel, angelos, means messenger. So how does God send messengers? With good news, right? With caring for you? Right. Some we even use that, don't we? Somebody's a real angel.
Yes.
Right. Yes.
And it's we see it usually positive.
Yes, definitely we do.
Yeah. For those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk or visit our website or Facebook page at Te Ngā Kawaiora Mercy Spirituality Center. My visitor today is Brother Kieran Fenn, and we are talking about angels. And Brother Kieran, after talking about the positive image of angels, there are also the fallen angels. In this context, there's another challenging concept, the hell. Hell.
Yes.
And so you said there are some negative angels?
Yeah. Let's start, first of all, then, with the biblical concept, because it annoys me so much when people come from every other area except the scriptures, when it comes to areas like the question of the Satan, hell. We'll start with Satan first. Because in the beginning of the book of Genesis, we have the serpent who was the most crafty of all the animals God made. Now, the crafty is a very interesting word because in Hebrew it's arum. And Adam and Eve are tempted to know as much as God. This is the essence of the temptation that's offered. Now, the word Satan means the adversary. So the Satan in the book of Genesis and in the book of Job is an angel, a good angel with a bad job. And the bad job is testing humanity.
So it's not a bad angel, it's a good angel with a bad job.
Exactly. Yep. And that is true of Genesis. Well, to go back to the Arum for a moment, the delightful point about that is when they actually eat of the fruit, their eyes are opened. And what do they know? They're naked. And the Hebrew word is Arumim. It's a pun. And you can catch it in English by saying, they set out to be shrewd and found they were nude. That's beautiful. Some of the punning that goes on in those, in the, you can only pick it up in Hebrew, and it's really humorous, very funny. But so we've got this good angel with the bad job. And it's not until the 4th century when the Jewish people come in contact with the Persians. And in the Persian religion, you have a good God and a bad God equal and opposite. So now how are the Jews going to handle this type of thinking? Then the badness gets dumped on the Satan. And then the Satan emerges as this figure that is against God. So that's where the Satan emerges from. Now, all right, are we going to turn the Satan into an individual person? Well, I would say, first of all, take out of this evil, this world, all the evil human beings put into it. Then you can leave the rest for the Satan, the evil Satan. But I think the Satan still is an interesting figure that is testing humanity as well.
in this context, when you were talking about Satan or the devil,
yes,
it reminds me of the current NZ Catholic, where there's an article about imitate St. Padre Pio's life, Pope says. And it says here that Pope Francis asked the people around if they believed in the devil. And people were not really sure what they should say.
Yes.
And he said, well, do you believe that the devil exists? And only a handful of people responded. And as it says in the article, he told them it didn't seem they were really totally convinced. So he continues, I'm going to have to tell your bishop, the bishop, to give you some catechesis.
Yes.
And he said jokingly. And then he said, does the devil exist or not? And the crowd then said yes.
Yes, there's a collectivity of sin. There is a collectivity of evil. Now, is that a personal thing? Is there within ourselves this mixture of good and bad? I think, you know, in the past, I suppose we get into the topic of sin, but I don't want to go down that road because it would be exhaustive, right? But I think we have to take it seriously. I think we trivialized it in the past when we found it everywhere. So, that's another area. But the poor old Pope Francis, recently, it wasn't the question of whether the devil exists, it was whether hell exists.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we pray week after week in the Creed that he descended into hell. I mean, what on earth is Jesus himself going into hell?
Well, that's an interesting question because when I came to New Zealand and I heard about God, that he descended into hell, I was really surprised because in German it's hinabgestiegen das Reich des Todes, which is translates into descended into the empire of death.
Yes, good.
It sounds more poetic, more mystic.
But what it means, of course, is you have to understand, going back to the scriptures, where did people go when they died? They went into Sheol.
And that's like the empire of death, isn't it?
That's it. And Sheol is where. Why does he go into hell? If Matthew, this apocalyptic language that Jesus goes in to free the dead, people like St. Joseph, the prophets, these are the people that were in Sheol. It was a place. Nobody gives praise to God in Sheol. The psalmist talks about Sheol. To actually have it as hell, I think, is a terrible, misleading piece of writing. He descended into Sheol. Then you have to explain what Sheol meant in the whole context of the Bible. But again, let's take this hell into the Christian perspective. In the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus talks about Gehenna. You'll be liable to the fire of Gehenna. Now, Gehenna was the rubbish dump outside of Jerusalem, always burning. And Gehenna is the Hebrew for the Valley of Hinnom. And the Valley of Hinnom, beside Jerusalem, is where Judas, in Matthew's Gospel, took his own life. It's also the place where the kings of Israel, when it was united as a single country, Judah, the kings of Judah, they sacrificed their children to whether it's to win battle or to push the enemy away. When I was in the Holy Land, it was a fairly hot country, but on the day I walked through the Valley of Hinnom, realizing that this is where Judas died, this is where the kings of Israel committed that atrocious act of sacrificing their children, I felt cold walking through the Valley of Hinnom. But see, round that fire, that ever-burning fire of the Valley of Hinnom, the lepers congregated for warmth in the cold of the night, those who'd been cast out. So it becomes the symbol for those who are choosing to be away from the rest of humanity, those who are cast out, living that hellish experience.
So that's really the place where you don't want to go.
That's precisely right. And it's who would be a candidate for a place like that? I mean, I think the Pope got into trouble because he was trying to get people to think beyond the fire and the length of time, which these things, time and fire, that's beyond. We have to try to describe these things in terms of what we know as human beings. But these are things that do not belong in the context of eternity. And someone has said that we've got to develop a theology of the four last ends of death, judgment, heaven and hell in ways that speak to people today. And that's the responsibility of theologians and scripture scholars, to get these truths, and that includes Satan and sin, in a way that people can understand and make sense of today. And for me, taking it back to the scriptures. See, I was asked one time by a dear old nun. I was taking a retreat, and she said, "Brother, I'm afraid of purgatory." And I said, "Sister, I am more and more convinced that what happens when we die, we appear before a God who just surrounds us with so much, an immensity of love. And we realize that there are times in our life when we didn't measure up to that love. And that's purgatory. And I think God takes into account, because there's no such thing as time, the impact of our life, the love that other people have for us." There was a beautiful young woman who died yesterday of breast cancer in Lower Hutt. And she's worked in a school. She was only in her 30s. And she was such a loved person. And she worked with these youngsters at school. And, you know, I just think that her life was such a beautiful life that she would be taken into the warm embrace of a loving God at once. The purgatory, of course, would be what she's been through over these years of carrying this cross of cancer, having to say goodbye to all those young people that she's loved. I think there's truths that we are not drawing out of these teachings, what they really mean. We settle for some answers that are alienating, that don't really make sense for people today who are struggling to understand the meaning of death, of judgment, of heaven and hell. I've had to struggle because I've got this melanomic cancer now, and I face all these things. But I wanted to encompass them in the teaching of the scriptures and in the warmth of the surety of God's love.
And so sometimes it's just the word that has a completely different concept.
Oh, yes.
And I think that hearing that a few days ago, there was a sports idol who expressed his opinion on who is going to hell. And
yes.
That, this concept reminds me very much of the Middle Ages, when yes. the fear of hell was used to manipulate especially yes. the uneducated people.
Yes, yes. Actually, it was to control the Germans, the barbarians. That was the barbarian tribes. It was actually used then to bring them into line.
But well, you know, I didn't know it was the Jews.
But yeah, it was. Besides, yeah. But the point of so much of this is control of people. We've got to think the stuff through.
I think that also people have always been afraid of the fire getting too close to one. And so that is like a punishment that was put somewhere.
Yeah. Well, see, faith seeking understanding is the most basic line with regard to questioning. Our faith's not our own till we've questioned it. It's someone else's. And then the other thing, I've been emphasizing the scriptures. And my favorite line, and I would write it over the, I think every seminarian should write it on a slate and put it over their bed. The presence of the Lord in his word is as real as his presence in the Eucharist. I like to hold up a host, and I like to hold up the Bible, and I say the presence of the Lord is as real in each of these. And are our people being fed from the table of the word as well as they're being fed from the table of the Eucharist? We have two tables in front of us at Mass. Now, the responsibility of learning and speaking with authority from the Scriptures is what is life-giving for the people. And it's at the heart of the history of the Reformation, the tragedy of the Reformation. But we need, are we a biblical church? Are our people being fed from the table of the Word? It will only happen when those who are giving and entrusted with a homily spend their life studying, deepening their scriptural awareness, reading. Otherwise, they're like a teacher going into a school classroom and not having prepared their lesson, not having been faithful to ongoing learning.
But it's like when you read a book, whatever book it is, you read it at different stages of your life.
Yes.
And it will have a different impact on you.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, it was once said that the Scripture is not a book that we read. It's a book that reads us.
That's what one of the Hebrew scribes we had last year in our center, she said, she asked us to take one of the letters that she prepared. And she said, but be careful, you're not picking the letter. The letter is going to pick you.
Exactly.
And it was amazing how the letters fit to each person.
Oh, right. Yes, yeah, I like that. Right. Ah, yes, yes.
So it's really a question of understanding the words and understanding the story behind the words.
Exactly.
And the context of the words. So we'll hope that Pope Francis will always have the right words, and he's very good in metaphors and in finding good examples.
Yes.
But I think that sometimes he is asked a question where it's yes or no, and there are many questions, and especially when you talk about faith, you can't answer with yes or no.
Well, was it Augustine who had that wonderful line, "It's an immoral law that allows for no exceptions"? So how can you give yes and no in so many situations?
Yeah. So what would you say to somebody who comes very innocently and says, what is hell?
I would say hell is living in that state of loneliness where you are so enmeshed in hate that you are not open to love. And that is an eternal, the love that is offered by God, you say no to. Now, can you imagine at death encountering this enormous love and saying, no, I don't want it? And now, I don't want to see a headline saying that Brother Kieran doesn't believe in hell. Brother Kieran says, yes, hell exists. It's the ability to make a choice that contravenes every aspect of love that we're made for.
And what about devil? What would you say about the devil or what Satan?
I would say, take out of this world all the evil human beings put into it, and you can give the rest to the devil. The Bible, it's interesting, the Bible never says in the Old Testament, the devil made me do it. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, of course, the Satan is that figure, the tester of humanity. So what's sin? Sin, according to the Bible, is missing the mark of what we're made for, missing the target. And I can see God is the target for us. I actually love the sort of idea that between ourselves and God is this arrow pointed directly to God. And sometimes as we go along that arrow, the lines run off it. We used to talk about venial sin, and venial sin is where we sort of step off that line towards the God that we're made for. Now, in your life, if you ever turn that arrow 180 degrees away from God to yourself, choosing something over God, then how many times in your life do you think you've made that 180 degree turn against what you're made for? And that's the only mortal sin which can take you away from God. Somebody once asked a moral theologian in Rome, how many mortal sins do you think are being committed in the world at the present moment? And he said, at a stretch of imagination, perhaps one. Now, is that, now then you mean that you're denying the existence of mortal sin? No, he's just saying take it seriously, because we didn't take it seriously when every day people had to be jumping into the confessional before they went to communion because they thought they were in a state of mortal sin. Yeah.
Well, I think that what you said, faith is growing, and you have to ask questions,
yes,
and to understand and constantly learn about it.
Yes, yes. Somebody said something that struck me just yesterday, Peter, that Pope Francis, you know, all these critics of Pope Francis, you know, they're scared that Pope Francis is trying to bring freedom to the church. I think there is freedom when you look for the truth of so many of these teachings instead of sort of taking some of the tragic distortions and misrepresentations of the past.
Thank you very much, Brother Kieran.
Right.
Thank you. And I think that now we know more about angels, hell, and the devil. Right. And we don't have to be afraid.
Yes.
Thank you very much. And what is coming up in our Mercy Spirituality Center? Well, we have a retreat day coming up with the title Air, Water, Fire, Stone. It's a retreat day with Fran Francis and Chris Telfer. And it's called an elemental retreat day inspired by John Donohoe's The Four Elements, Reflections on Nature, 28th of April from 9:30 to 4 p.m. And then we'll have our second part of our cultural diversity series, and that will be about the New Zealand Sign Language. And as you know, New Zealand Sign Language, it's one of our three official languages in Aotearoa, New Zealand. And we'll have Rachel Marr, a young woman who works in the diocese, and she is going to tell us a little bit more about what the challenges are about for people who depend completely on sign language. But she also is going to show us how to connect in a positive and joyful way with people who are unable to communicate by spoken languages. And then we have our Trinity series coming up with Helen Bergen, Sister Helen Bergen. And that will be on the 17th and the 24th of May. And we also have Kathleen Rushton coming, and she will give a weekend workshop on Everything is Interconnected, Completing the Works of God as in the Gospel According to John. And Kathleen Rushton will also be hopefully our next next guest in our Muffin Talk. And I hope that we can talk a little bit about what she means with Everything is Interconnected. And I wish you all a blessed Friday. If you are interested in any of our presentations, talks, or workshops, please register with us per phone at Auckland 09-638-6238 or via our website at www.mercyspiritualitycentre.org.nz. Thank you very much, Brother Kieran, for coming to the studio. And I wish you all a blessed Friday and a good week ahead. Thank you.